Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a podcast for the discerning gamer. Hello everyone, and welcome back to Pixels. This is a show where we cover the news from the video game industry, that's hard to say. We talk about games every couple of weeks. We cover the industry, the games we've been playing, and we try to put a little bit of an analytical angle to it. My name is Patrick Beja, and today I'm very happy to welcome for the first time on the show, Marcus. Oh, actually, I forgot to ask you your last name. Are you Marcus Cosmonaut? Is that actually your last name?
No, Marcus Turner, but people know me as Cosmonaut Marcus.
Okay, excellent. You don't keep your last name a secret on the internet, and I just tricked you into revealing it.
Yeah, no, it's fine. People figure it out eventually, so.
Excellent. Well, thank you for being on. You run a wonderful YouTube channel, which I really enjoy, and you mostly talk about movies on there, and... Yes. The reason I really enjoy your videos, I think, is because you are always right in the sense that you always agree with my impressions of the movies.
That's the first time I've been called right.
Well, you know, I'm usually called wrong, so there might be some internal logic on there.
There we go.
So
we're both wrong.
Well, I mean, if we agree that we're right, I think we can determine who here is going to tell otherwise. No one.
Exactly. So. There you go.
Cool. So we can talk about this a little bit later, but you are very much into comics and you love Spider-Man. Yeah. And we're going to be talking about Spider-Man, among other things. The other things we're going to be talking about are the Nintendo Direct, which just happened last week. We're going to talk about the Black Ops Battle Royale mode Blackout, the TGS conference for Sony, which happened last week as well, and a couple of other tidbits. But first, the big news for the week, or at least for this episode, which we come out every 2 weeks. So we're a little bit late, but it gave us time to finish the game. So the big news is Spider-Man, the PlayStation 4 exclusive developed by Insomniac Studios. And it's a pretty big deal. I think there's a lot to say. We're going to be dividing the discussions because you finished the game as well, right?
Yes, I did.
I finished it yesterday late. I was laboring intensely to be able to do the show properly. We're going to be talking spoiler-free for the first part, and then we're going to go into spoilers afterwards, but I will cut that spoiler part out of the discussion and set it at the end of the show so that people who don't want to hear anything spoilery can just listen without a worry, and then they can leave the show at the end once I announce the spoilers are going to be coming. So I guess I'm going to ask the easy first question. We're still in the non-spoiler question. What did you think about this game?
I really like it. I had a kind of like a conflict when I first played it, because after like being so like I've been reviewing, I tried to like go all summer like reviewing a bunch of stuff and try to bang out a lot of like critical analysis stuff on my channel. So my mindset is still that of like trying to like look for problems and things. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So when I played it, I was like, oh, I don't really like this. I don't like this. But then I'm like, you know what? I'm having a lot of fun. I'm not going to worry too much about it. There were some things that I didn't that really kind of bugged me. But overall, I think I really do love the game. I think it's probably my game of the year.
Oh, really? Game of the year? Wow. And
yeah.
This is a full year. I think it maybe falls short of game of the year for me because there are so many other great games. But the way I look at it, there are certainly problems in the game, you're right. I think it's a good game. It's a really good game as an overall game. But I think it's such a great Spider-Man game specifically, maybe superhero game, but specifically Spider-Man game, that it will give a lot of joy to people who enjoy Spider-Man. And
yeah.
Even more than that, I think it makes you, it ropes you into its mechanics, and it makes you enjoy Spider-Man, even if you don't necessarily care about the character. And I think that's one thing which everyone has been talking about, deservedly so. It gets Spider-Man in the mechanics and in the spirit of the character, right? I guess you know him super well. I mean, I read the comics, and I've read the comics for a long time, but you're really into it. Would you agree with that characterization?
Yeah, for sure. It even in like the way that everything works in the game, not just like, you know, Peter talking to people or, you know, him interacting with the world, like just the way you have to play the game, the way the game forces you to play is intrinsically Spider-Man. Like you,
what do you mean have by to, that?
You have to like dodge around. You can't, like, he'll die in two hits basically. If you get shot, you're donezo. Like you can't take more than like one rocket to the face. You have to stay on the move, because when enemies like in the bases that you have to go through to like fight a bunch of guys, or like even like the big levels that they design, enemies will come in from all around the room. Like when they call in reinforcements, like in Batman, you're in like kind of like a box when you fight, and the guys come to you and then they fight you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And in Spider-Man, they'll come up from like the balconies. They'll come like from like corners. You can't even see them. You have to stay on the move. They force you to swing around to zip to other guys. Like you have to fight like Spider-Man, or else you're not going to win, you know? And I really like.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff like that. Yeah, I mean, obviously, the comparison to Batman is pretty obvious, and there's a lot of inspiration there. And the game is completely unapologetic in its implementation of tropey game mechanics. The Batman inspiration is blindingly obvious. The
hold
open
on a sec.
World.
You're cutting out for me. Give me
oh,
one second.
Sorry.
No, okay.
Okay. Hopefully, it's better now. Yeah, the Batman inspiration is super obvious, and the open world design is almost after games like Zelda, Breath of the Wild, and even to an extent, the even more classic ones like God of War, which had its own spin on it. It feels uninspired, but the core mechanics of the game are so good. And to get back to the Batman thing, Before I started playing, I felt, oh, maybe this is going to be exactly like Batman, which I love the Batman game, so I didn't have a problem with it. But within the confines of that system, you're right. It makes you feel like Spider-Man, because Batman is super heavy and powerful.
Yeah.
Spider-Man is all nimble, and he zips around on his web. And the implementation of it is completely... fits the character completely. And you mentioned Peter Parker. I know you talked about your favorite old Spider-Man game before this one came out.
Yeah.
It feels like they've never done Peter Parker, at least not right, like they do in this one.
Yeah, no. Out of all the Spider-Man games I've played, Peter Parker is kind of like pushed to the side, or he's done horribly, like in Web of Shadows. Even if you play like the good, because like, you can do like a good evil thing, when you play the good one, Peter Parker is still kind of horrible. Like I hate his character in that game. But he's never like in this game. You play as him. Like you can walk around and do stuff. I'm not really a huge fan of the on foot non Spider-Man segments in the game, but they do help you feel more like Peter. Like you will watch a lot of cutscenes with him. He's just as much a part of the game as the Spider-Man stuff is. So even when it's not like executed that well, you still get like you are going to be watching Peter Parker as well as him as Spider-Man, you know?
And I think it serves a purpose, as you said, because imagine however boring you think those passages are when you're playing them, imagine the game without them. And all of a sudden, it is a very different game. You don't have the same weight, the same involvement. And I guess that's a good moment to talk about the characters beyond Spider-Man. And we didn't even mention the web-slinging, zipping across New York. I think everyone talked about how good it feels, so we don't need to spend too much time on it. But essentially, it's awesome. It's really, really great. But the characters, they have, Insomniac has taken, I think it's the first time, I can't remember where I heard this. I never have an original idea in any show ever. I just recycle things I've heard on other shows and I've read other places. But someone said this is the first time they got, there's enough background about Spider-Man and enough general knowledge about superheroes and Spider-Man specifically that they didn't need to go through the origin stories story and, you know, Uncle Ben dying and all that crap, which we all know and would have been just eye-rolly, really. But beyond that, they had a license to give their own interpretation of all of the characters. And I love what they did with Aunt May. I love what they did with, maybe I'm not going to say what characters, but there are a couple other characters that are really, maybe we'll talk about that in the spoiler section. But the way they approach all of, even Peter, they have weird plasticky faces that somehow feel real.
Alive,
and, yeah. I wonder if it's because they captured the actual actors' faces. I didn't research this. Maybe I should have.
It reminded me of Infamous Second Son. I didn't play that game, but I watched. I would watch streams or stuff, and the facial expressions in that game are like perfect. They're really good, and it kind of reminded me of that, where they have a lot of subtlety in their expressions. Like there's some cutscenes where between MJ and Peter, where like in the past they've dated or whatever, but you can see that relationship in their faces. And I'm like, that's what you would say for a movie. The game's like, it's not like, you know, picture perfect. Like they're still video game characters, but you can see a lot in like their expressions and you kind of really get immersed in the story and the world because of that.
I completely agree. It is, there's something about the expressions that is, so I'm looking up Osborn's actor, Norman Osborn's actor, and he doesn't quite look like the character in game a little bit. Maybe there's some inspiration, but you're right. The facial animation, even though it's not the highest, polygon count on the character you've ever seen, probably because they need, you know, to save some of those polygons for the city of New York. But still, the faces convey emotions in a way that is, and the actors are really good.
Oh, yeah, so, the voice acting is amazing.
Yeah, really great. So overall, what I would say is the game is not the most original game there is for its core mechanics, but that they're really solid. They're really good, so they're enjoyable to play to the point that you don't care the other portions of the game that are a little bit too repetitive. Because what, for example, there are some elements of some missions that you have to do, the research missions, for example, or some of them that feel a little bit like you don't necessarily want to do that. But since you're using the core mechanics of swinging or of combat, you still enjoy it when you're doing it. So it's a weird. And the other part of it, I think, is because of the way it is structured and it's welcoming of any kind of player, I think it's super good for casual players as well, which obviously with the Marvel hype and the popularity of the characters, including Spider-Man, is great for normal people. Like, it's a game I would have no problem recommending to someone who buys, you know, two games a year.
Exactly.
The open worldiness is, you already know it because you've played some Assassin's Creed or some game that does this, including with the towers and all of this. And it might seem a little bit cringy for people who review video games all the time, but for normal people, I think that's a plus. And I think it's an intentional design of the game to get people, for people to be, to have an easy time getting into it.
Yeah, for once, I didn't hate towers that much. Like, I was fine with them in this game because they incentivized you going around to, each borough or each, district of Manhattan. And, it made you want to go to each part where, normally in Spider-Man games, if there's no collectibles over in, this corner, you're not going to go over there. You don't really need to, unless you're going to stop, a crime or something. But every single, area has a bunch of stuff jam-packed in it.
And they're all fun. even getting the 15 yeah. billion backpacks, it's just, you know, it's fun. Oh, you swing around.
I love that.
And, yeah. And I think another aspect of it is that everything is rewarding. Like, even the backpacks, you collect them, sure, but it's a narrative device to tell you about the world, how the world has been and how Spider-Man has been until this point in his life. And every time you get a little nugget, either, you know, a wink about something that the fans will know or something that tells you, oh, he already knows he's already beaten a ton of bad guys and he has a history with all of them. And so it's not just backpacks for the sake of collectioning, or maybe it is, but they've used that very cleverly.
Yeah, it's a narrative engine, basically.
Yeah. Are you from New York? I didn't ask.
No, I'm from Florida, but okay, I've been in New York once.
Okay, I've been in New York once. But yeah, so I guess it doesn't speak to us the same way it would a New Yorker. But I think there's, even though it's not New York one-to-one, I think there are some, like even to me, because it's popular culture and in everyone's mind, some parts of real New York, like the Avengers Tower, for example, really felt like, oh, that's awesome. All right. I think we're going to go to the spoiler section, which I'm going to cut and put at the end of the episode. So if you don't want to hear spoilers, don't worry. We'll dive into the Nintendo Direct right now. All right. We just finished recording the spoiler section, which, as I said, is going to be at the end of the episode. So now we're going to be talking about the Nintendo Direct. Bunch of stuff announced / discussed in the Nintendo Direct. A bunch of games, and the other big thing is the details on the Switch Online service. So first, let's go through the games. Animal Crossing announced for 2019. Super Mario Bros. U Deluxe is coming out January 11th. Yoshi's Crafted World is coming up in the spring. Luigi's Mansion 3 is coming to the Switch. And those are the Nintendo games. What do you think about those? I have thoughts as well.
I'm gonna be honest. I'm not
sure.
I'm not the biggest Animal Crossing fan. I loved Animal Crossing on GameCube when I was a kid. I played GameCube Animal Crossing for like summers and summers on end. But after that, like in my adult life, I can't get into Animal Crossing. I think like my proclivities have changed too much. Like I can't play it anymore. I tried playing the DS, the 3DS one. I couldn't get into it. All my friends were playing it too. And they're like, hey, you know, come check out my town. I'm like, you know what? I don't really care. I don't have the time to pull weeds every day. I got stuff to do. I don't want to pay off my, like at that point I was starting to pay my own rent. I don't want to pay fake rent to a raccoon. So like, I can't get back in Animal Crossing, but I will try again because anything on Switch, like things I wasn't a huge fan of, I'll play them on Switch. Like, I don't know why, but like the Switch makes you want to play things that you normally wouldn't
it's
play.
It's weird, yeah. Well, listen, okay, you know I have a wife and a baby, but somehow I really feel there's some kind of connection between us. And if you want to have a thing on the side, I wouldn't say no, because I also don't like Animal Crossing. I don't understand. Like, we agree on Marvel movies, Spider-Man movies, Star Wars movies, and on this too, there's no one who doesn't like
That's
Animal
strange.
Crossing.
Yeah, it's weird.
And so I think everyone's happy about Animal Crossing coming out, but like, yeah, I don't. It's part of those games, kind of like Pokemon, and this is where we might, part. But Pokemon, I was already too old when it came out, and it was like this kid's thing, and I don't really.
That makes
never
sense.
Got into it.
That makes perfect sense.
But yeah, Animal Crossing is kind of in that same category of games that I don't get into, and I just don't get it. And everyone's like, oh, Tom Nook is saying that you should be a good citizen in his town. And I'm like, oh, I don't. What I do care about, however, is New Super Mario Bros. U Deluxe. First of all, because I didn't play it on the Wii U. I don't know. I played it on the 3DS and whatever. So I'll be getting it and playing it, of course, because I always want to play a Super Mario Brothers. But also because it means we're getting closer and closer to them announcing Super Mario 3D World for the Switch, which I will happily replay from beginning to end because that was an awesome underrated game.
Yeah, that's what I'm really looking forward to.
Oh, you too?
I really want that. Yeah, I want to play that.
Yeah. It was so did you play it on the Wii U or?
I played it my friend Dan. He had every game on the Wii U, but I didn't know anybody else on the Wii U. So
right.
Yeah, I would just play whatever he had, and that was the one that I liked the most. So I'm like, I want to play that on my own. Same thing with like when Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze came out. I haven't gotten to play it on Switch yet, but I was just waiting for them to put it on Switch so I could play it myself.
Yeah, I mean, that one is really great, but yeah, it's not the one coming out now. Hopefully next year it will be. Yoshi's Crafted World is coming in 2019, as I said. And Luigi's Mansion, I think it's going to be an opportunity for me to maybe try one finally, because I never did.
So. Never played one?
No.
I forgot the second one came out. Like, I legitimately completely forgot about it. I played the first one a lot when I was a kid, but for some reason, when I was a kid, when if a game was like a little too like dark, I couldn't finish it. Like that game spooked me. I was too scared of that game, and I was old enough to not be afraid of that game at that point. But for some reason, it got under my skin. Probably because like when you play a Mario game, you have a certain expectation, and I did not expect to be even slightly uncomfortable by that game.
That's Luigi for you. He will make you feel things. The second one came out on 3DS, by the way, in 2013. So
that's it.
That's why. Good lineup, but it's nothing. They didn't talk about the really big hitters. Although there, you know, one more thing at the end was Animal Crossing, and apparently everyone except I guess the two of us and a couple of other recluse don't really like it. If you're part of our club of people who don't really like Animal Crossing, just let us know, because we'd like to have.
We want
to
know.
Yeah.
Yeah. We feel like we're just the people who don't like fun.
Basically, that's how I feel when I talk about Pokemon. Final Fantasy, there's a collection that's coming out on the Switch of remakes, 7, 9, 10, and a bunch of others. 8 didn't make the cut, but
nope.
unsurprisingly. But yeah, sure. Why not?
I'm really excited about this because
oh, really?
I have not had a chance to beat 9 yet. I had a year when I first started college where I was trying to beat every single Final Fantasy game. I played them out of order because I was like, okay, some of these are not that great. Some of these are really good. I'm going to play a good one and then a not so great one and then a good one. And I tried to go like that. I played 10 first because I never beat 10. 10 was the first one I played and I never beat it. And I beat it. I'm like, oh, that was great. I love this game. I was having such a great time. And then I went to 2, and 2 is horrible. 2 is one of the worst games I've ever played in my life. I hate that game. And then I played through the whole thing. I kept trucking. I played, I think I played 1. I played a bunch of them, but I got up to 12, and then I got burnt out. I quit. But
yeah.
I never got to play 9. I was saving 9 for like one of the last ones because I really wanted to play 9. I've owned all of them for years, and I just haven't played all of them. And I really wanted to play 9. So it's going to be on Switch. I will totally play that again. And 7, which is my personal favorite.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, 7 is everyone's personal favorite, I feel. Unless, you know, you're old school and you like 3, which is actually 6 in Japan, the Super Nintendo one.
I haven't gotten to beat 6. I wish that one was on the Switch. I'd play that too.
I mean, it's one of those things where it was so awesome at the time, and nowadays, yeah, not so. I mean, things have changed. But 9, I mean, unless you play it on stream, I suspect you won't finish it. Or maybe you will. I don't know.
I don't think I will either.
Yeah. Diablo 3 is coming out, and I'm only mentioning this because, as you know, very big Blizzard fan, used to work there. But...
Oh, really? I didn't know that. I didn't know you used to work there.
That's awesome. Well, I worked in the European office for 5 years. So
that's crazy. That's really cool.
Yeah, yeah. I quit to do this job, to podcast. This is how insane I am. So disclaimer, I still do it now. I used to work at Blizzard. But Diablo 3 is coming out on November 2nd. You know what is also happening on November 2nd? BlizzCon. You know what is possibly going to be announced? No, it's not even possibly. We're certain it's going to be announced now. The new Diablo project. And this is just another hint it's going to happen. So there you go. Is it going to be Diablo 4? Is it going to be another name? Another... We'll see. But
world of Diablo.
I think they already have a world of something that's doing pretty well. So,
really, I've never heard of that.
Yeah, it sold pretty. the last expansion did well. I that's what I hear.
I'm actually pretty excited for Diablo 3 on Switch because I really like Diablo. I played Diablo 2 back when I was younger, and I couldn't play Diablo 3 that much because none of my friends would play it with me. I was so upset. I bought it for one of my friends. I'm like, I will buy you this game if you play it with me.
That's dedication.
He played it for one day. He's like, I don't like this. It's boring. I'm like, oh, great. I guess I'll just play by myself. So, but now it's going to be on Switch, and those same friends are like, oh, Diablo, I'll play it. And I'm like, oh, of course you will, because it's on Switch. Fine. You can dress up as Ganondorf, and now you'll play it. So I'm going to play that.
That's, you know, I think it's an awesome, like, if you still are in a, I don't know, in geographical location or time in your life where you have friends who come over, this is, or you go hang out places, the Switch is perfect for this. As I mentioned a few times, I'm not going to play it because I've played it so much I'm done. And there are other things to play. And there's a Diablo skin in Overwatch, which also coincides with BlizzCon, which means, Diablo Project. The other big thing about... Yeah, me too. I devoured Diablo 3. The other big thing in the Direct is the online service, which has some controversial things, but I think everyone's going to get anyway because it's relatively cheap and everyone loves the Switch. But basically, a reminder, it's $4 a month or $20 a year. Launching in, well, actually tomorrow, September 18, there's a 7-day trial, but the few things to note about it. First of all, not all games will require it in order to play online. Fortnite is one that you don't need the service in order to play online. I wonder how the deal is going there between Epic and Nintendo. Like, is Epic paying Nintendo to get Fortnite out of that...
They
requirement?
Have to be.
I guess, yeah. I guess they would be.
They have to be like, hey, listen, we want our game to be as free to play as possible, so make sure they don't have to pay that extra money. But does on PlayStation 4 and like Xbox, you have to pay for those subscriptions, and you still have to play, you know, Fortnite. You have to pay to play Fortnite on there, right?
Honestly, I'm not sure. I think there are some games that can have the same deal. If I were professional, I'd have prepared for that question. Fortnite, let me try to Google it. Fortnite, this is great podcasting. PS4, PSN, pay money to play. I don't know. Actually, a question would be better. Does Fortnite PS4 require PS Plus? You do need Live Gold to pay, but you do not need PS Plus. So on Xbox you do, on PlayStation you don't. That's interesting.
Interesting.
That's
weird. I didn't know that.
Me neither. I guess the thing is, people don't really think about it on PlayStation or Xbox, because if that's your main console, you're probably gonna be paying for PS Plus anyway. But on Nintendo, the question exists because you already have many people already have the other thing. So I don't know. Cloud saves are going to be included in the service, but some games are not going to be cloud save enabled for the weirdest reason I've ever heard. Like, Nintendo says it's to avoid cheating, because if you delete your save when you've died and re-download it, you, like, even if that was the case, first of all, every other console manufacturer seems to be doing great without that. And if that was the case, just restrict the number of downloads to like one or twice per week, and that's problem solved, I would think.
I mean, at the same time, like, if I want to restart my single player game and go back, what's wrong with that? If it's not like Dark Souls or something, if I just want to go back in Mario, what's wrong with that? Why is that an issue?
There are some games, it's specific games that are not going to be cloud saved enabled, like Pokemon, Splatoon, and Dark Souls for some reason. But Splatoon, maybe if they save locally the thing, your ranking, first of all, that's a bad idea. But maybe, I don't know. So, but even Dead Cells, for example, is not going to enable it. And I play a lot of Dead Cells. I would hate for my save to, you know, be lost. So,
yeah, exactly. I haven't gotten to play that yet. I really do want to play Dead Cells.
Oh, it is so good. It is so good. Yeah, by the way, I repeat this at the end of the show. The previous episode, episode 91, is a very long interview with Dead Cells devs. And I never do interviews, but this in this case, I thought it would be pretty cool. They're French. And they didn't, to my knowledge, they didn't really have a lot of interviews in English. So if you enjoy Dead Cells, just go check that episode out. It's Pixels episode 91. And I'll say it again at the end. You also have 20 NES games included. I never cared for NES games. I mean, it's the kind of thing you play for 2 minutes and then forget.
There's a couple. Like, I can play Mega Man 2. I can play Final Fantasy. No, I can play Mega Man 2.
Mega Man 2, and it's not included. So, well, there's Super Mario Brothers and 3 and Legend of Zelda, but it's more like once they get Super Nintendo games in there, I'll be interested. At this point,
yeah, then it's over. Yeah. Then I'm in there.
I mean, let's be honest. They have, what, 20 million units? If they have a third of the people subscribe to this for $20 a year, that's what, 6 million times 20? That's a lot of money. So, you know, it's still going to be money they get they wouldn't have gotten otherwise, and I guess that's what they expect. And when, you know, I mentioned it before, you get a game that requires it, you're going to set it up and never unsubscribe ever in your life. You're maybe not going to do it now, but yeah, exactly.
It's like you can seriously just forget about it. Like sometimes, like back when I wasn't, you know, making videos on the internet. Making
you mean a famous
money.
YouTuber?
Yeah, exactly. But no, when I was like, you know, working a job and a half, I when PlayStation hit, I was like, ooh, I forgot about that. And I was like, maybe I shouldn't subscribe to PlayStation Plus for like a little while. But no, it's $20 for a year. I've lost $20 at multiple
and not
points
cared
in my
about
life.
It.
Yeah, like I'm not gonna care. I'm gonna keep this on until I die, basically.
Yeah, but it's, you know, I've been walking in the street and $20 fell out of my pocket. I didn't even stop to pick it up. That's how cheap it is. All right, so there you go. This is a Nintendo online service. I really think they give you enough that they could not give you anything and you would still kind of subscribe, but they do to kind of justify it and to make you not riot about it while you're subscribing. So whatever, $20. It's fair that it doesn't do everything everyone else, every other similar service does.
It does more than I expected. So, sure, I'm okay with it.
I guess the 20 NES games, once they start putting, as I said, Super NES, I'll subscribe happily. Now I'll just subscribe.
I'll be like, oh, I guess I can play Balloon Fight.
All right, more news. Shadow of the Tomb Raider is out. Not a lot to say about this. It's supposedly a good Tomb Raider, not super inventive. A little bit samey, but if you like Tomb Raider, you're probably going to like it. I fear it's going to suffer from the competition, as I think every Tomb Raider game did. But
every Tomb Raider game comes out at the worst time with like games that everybody's been waiting for months or a year. And then Tomb Raider's also out. And you're like, why would I play Tomb Raider when Spider-Man is here? I've heard it's really good. Like I've heard a lot of people who are like, it's actually pretty good. I'm like, oh, that's great. I'm probably not going to play it, but I'm glad it's good for the people who are going to play it.
Exactly. That's pretty much my, I almost bought it at some point because it was already kind of on sale somewhere. And I thought I'm not going to play this. Like I have so many games. Like if I want to play it, it will be in like 4 months. And even then there are other games that are coming out. So it will be in 4 months and it will be a third of the price. So
I haven't even played Uncharted 4 yet, and I'm not going to play Tomb Raider before that. So
yeah, fair enough. The other big thing is the Black Ops 4 Battle Royale mode, the Blackout mode, which is available in beta. It's been all weekend, I think. And I got a chance to try it. Did you?
I didn't get to try it. I watched a little bit of it, though.
From everything I've heard, And actually what I felt, it feels like a polished, arcadey PUBG.
That's what I'm excited for. I'm really upset I didn't get to try it because, like, you know when you watch the PUBG trailers and, like, there's boats, like, jumping over trains and, like, just, like, all this crazy stuff. But then you play PUBG and none of that happens.
Yeah.
That's not how the game is. You're going to be walking around for an hour and then you're going to get shot by a guy who's been sitting in the same spot. That's how the experience is. But I watched the trailer for Blackout. I'm like, okay, for some reason, I believe the insanity in this one. Like, I believe that, like, it's going to be a lot more, you know, action-packed and exciting. And I'm like, one of the only people who I'm fine if every game has a Battle Royale mode. It doesn't hurt me. They're usually just extra, you know, it's like basically what Horde mode used to be back during, like, Xbox 360 and stuff like that. Every game had Horde mode. This game, like, every game having Battle Royale, that's fine. It doesn't hurt anybody by being there, and sometimes it'll be fun, so I'm perfectly okay with it.
Yeah, I agree. The comparison I usually do is comparing to any other genre or fighting games. You know, Street Fighter came out, or Street Fighter 2 came out, and everyone had their fighting game somehow. And some of them were really interesting and had good stuff and different approaches. And this is exactly the same thing. And what you're saying is, I think you're spot on. It feels like PUBG does in its trailers. And it kind of does feel like that. It's much more action concentrated, very arcadey. You get right into it. The few times I played PUBG, it was what you described. Just walk around aimlessly for 30 minutes. And obviously the strength of Fortnite is that it's much more action-y from the get-go, but then you have a little bit of the goofy mechanics and a lot of stuff that is not necessarily everyone's cup of tea. And I remember when I did another special, I don't do a lot of specials, but just happens to have been another one relevant here, with a class of third graders, I think, or fifth graders. What is 13? It's fifth grade? Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Something like that. And they told me, of course, they were all playing Fortnite, but they were like, you know what? We're waiting to see what happens with Call of Duty because that might steal Fortnite's fire. I don't think it's going to happen because Fortnite is, I mean, Epic is handling Fortnite. I say that every episode, but I think it's warranted. They are handling it so well. The new high stakes mode is incredible. They're so creative with their game.
They keep adding stuff. I play it. I'll play Fortnite maybe once every 2 months. And then when I go in, I'm like, this is a whole new game. Like, I didn't even know about the Thanos event. I walk in, there's Thanos is flying around. I'm like, what is happening? Like, I was just playing this like 2 months ago and now Thanos is killing everybody. I'm so confused. And like, as someone, like, I would normally not even want to turn it on again. Like, when I'm done with the game, I'm done with the game. I'll play something else. There's so many games out nowadays and I can afford to buy whatever I want. I'm not a kid, like, who, you know, you have one game and that's what you play. But if I'm going to go back to a game, I really appreciate when it has, like, so much support from the developers.
Yeah, completely agree. And in this case, well, okay, anyway, high stakes mode is super clever. There's basically four treasures or treasure, not locks, but safes on the map, and you have to get them, and people are, anyway, super clever. And the Battle Royale setting is so conducive to these kinds of iterations. Super clever. Anyway, I think possibly Black Ops might take some people away from PUBG. Not the hardcore players who like the super realistic, like we're camping in a bush for 30 minutes with a sniper rifle waiting for people to come across our crosshairs. But the people who just want a realistic-ish game that is more immediately accessible, Blackout mode might be it. But
I mean, for the first time, I'll probably pick up Call of Duty again. So, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it what reaches that level for me, but maybe, who knows?
My friends won't play Diablo with me, but they'll play Call of Duty with me. So I'll take what I can get.
Listen, man, I think you might need to revisit your choice of friends.
I'm just
putting it out there. All right, so Battlefield 5 has also unveiled their Battle Royale mode, Firestorm. Firestorm is how it's called. And there are, you know, objectives. And but it feels like Battlefield is...
they're playing catch-up, kind
of. Yeah, well, they're just out of luck. They're being outplayed by Call of Duty every year. And I understand it's not the same. It's not even the same demographic they're after. It's like the people who like Battlefield. But smartly, though, the EA has pushed the release to November. I think they didn't want to repeat the mistake of... what was that game that came out 2 years ago? The mech game. That one. Anyway,
I forgot the name too. Yeah, the one with the mech. I know what you mean.
One, which didn't sell because it was stuck between Call of Duty and another one. Anyway, November, it's going to have a Battle Royale. I think it's going to arrive after the battle for this. I didn't find the pun. There is one in there with battle, and I didn't find it. So, yeah, Battlefield is coming out as well. And, by the way, PUBG has dipped below its daily concurrency of 1 million for the first time in a year. I mean, they're still making tons of money. I'm not going to cry for them, but...
Yeah.
Tokyo Game Show...
I forgot the game exists, honestly.
What? Sorry. Which one? PUBG?
PUBG, yeah. Until, like, this conversation, I'm like, PUBG's completely out of mind.
The thing is, Fortnite is making so much noise, it kind of eclipsed it, but it's still, PUBG is still pretty big. They're making lots of money, and they have the mobile version, which is huge, obviously, so, yeah, I think they're doing okay. But, I mean, if anything is on a downward slope, it's PUBG, it's not Fortnite, so... That's always a concern.
Yeah.
Tokyo Game Show, there was a Sony conference like 10 days before the show started, which is a bit weird. And the conference itself, oh my God, it was so weird. It was like live translated with the Japanese way, which is the least emphasis you can put in your speech. You do that, geez. It feels so... And they had this weird space characters that were the buttons from the controller that would say stuff in space to explore. And it was in Japanese. I think you're going to get... you could do a video from this alone.
How weird it is.
It is super weird. Like, the Sony conference... Anyway, I always comment on these things because I think presentation is important. Obviously, that conference is tiny. It doesn't really matter on the grand scheme of things. But it's really, like... Japanese people are weird. And
a bit strange.
I know a few things about that. I lived there, I speak Japanese, all of that, but they're weird, and this is a good example of that. But anyway, a couple of things to note from that. There is a new game from the Yakuza team. Toshihiro Nagoshi came out on stage to present it, and it's set in Kamurocho in the setting of the Yakuza games, but it's a lawyer game. And it's launching just in a few months in Japan. It's coming to the West next year. There's a demo on the Japanese store if you're interested. It's called Judge Eyes. And so that's a big deal because it's the Yakuza team. Obviously, Yakuza is not as big in the West, so it's not as important. But if you're into it...
It has been growing
very
recently.
Very much so, yeah.
I've on PlayStation Plus on PS3, I think I've gotten like 3 of the games for free and just never played them. But I really wanted to play, was it Yakuza 0? I wanted to play that really bad. Is this game in the Yakuza universe?
Yes. I think it's actually in the neighborhood of Kamurocho, which is a riff on Kabukicho, which is an actual place in Tokyo. Which I went through every day when I went to work, by the way. So it is in that universe, is my understanding.
I might check that out. The only thing about Yakuza like this, it's so... I don't want to play the first one, you know?
Yeah.
I want to jump in on the cool ones. And I know Zero is good for that, but I'm okay with playing a new story in that universe. I'll try that out.
I've tried the demo. It's interesting. It's definitely Japanese, and it's definitely... double A masquerading as triple A. So there are some things that you feel, but you know, it's it's fine. It's that's not why you come to the game. And the Japan-ness of it sort of carries it for Western audiences as well. And it's super well acted, super well. There are some parts of it that are top notch, and some parts that are not, you know, third to top notch, which make them stand out so much. But yeah. And the other thing is a new Samurai Showdown game, which is coming out in 2019 using the Unreal Engine, so 3D. Yeah, Samurai Showdown. That looked
crazy. I will play that. That looked so fun.
It's so weird that we're getting so many fighting games coming back.
I am fine with it.
Me too.
I love fighting games, and I haven't played a lot of the fighting games that a lot of people swear by, like Samurai Showdown and stuff. I play Street Fighter and Tekken and the mainstays, but I haven't gotten to play like some of the deep cuts. So when a game like this gets, you know, announced that's coming back, I'm like, I will finally get to play it. So I'm cool. And it looks crazy. I really like the idea of like a 2D fighter with, you know, a weapon-based 2D fighter. I'm excited for it.
I really like it too, and I'm very curious to see how SNK is going to bring it into modern times. Game was very specific. Like, one hit would chop off a third of your health bar if you were doing it well. And there's a real opportunity to do something interesting with weapons and the way you handle combat, given like it could be just another fighting game. It's probably that what it's gonna be, and you're gonna have the combos and because it's really hard to do fatal sword fighting. Yeah. Like, what's the fun if you kill someone in one hit, essentially? Because if you do
it's like a Nidhogg, you know, like one hit, you're done. Like, exactly. I'm okay with like a tactical. Like, one hit will basically kill you, but you have to be real careful. I'm cool with that.
Could be, but then the games might not be as fun, or maybe you do that and you have like four rounds instead of two or something like that. And there are things that could be done with Samurai Showdown, and that would be carried by the emotional attachment people have for that game, which again is like, I feel Samurai Showdown has more of a mystique around it than something like even Fatal Fury or Art of Fighting, which are the other big fighting game franchises from SNK from that time. So there's an opportunity for sure. So we'll see.
Yeah.
A bunch of additional tidbits. We were talking about the Switch. Assassin's Creed Odyssey is coming out on Switch. You heard me right. It is coming out. This latest AAA game is coming out on Switch via streaming. So this is the second game, to my knowledge, to do this on Switch. First one was a Capcom. I think it was Resident Evil, one of the Resident Evils. A few months ago, we talked about it on this show. But essentially, Ubisoft is getting into that game as well, which is streaming. You download an app and it's very light, and you actually stream the game if you are connected to the internet. And it's a single player game. If you have a good enough internet connection, which in Japan most people do, it's probably going to be very playable. A little bit of lag, but not too bad. So this also fits with the Ubisoft president Yves Guillemot was saying a few months ago, which was the streaming is the future of games. And of course, we heard about Project Scarlet on the Xbox, on the Microsoft side, the next Xbox, which would incorporate streaming significantly. And I think this is Ubisoft getting ready for this and probably testing it out in Japan with the Switch, because they might want at some point to launch their own service, like apparently everyone is nowadays.
Yeah. So,
it's interesting.
That's surprising. I sometimes the Switch, like that's a good way to do it, because like I was playing Enter the Gungeon on the Switch and it was lagging really bad. And that's it's like a pixel art game and it was lagging. And I know they had to downgrade Diablo a little bit to make it run smoothly. So I'm excited to see like a AAA title on there.
So it's only going to be in Japan, by the way. I don't know if I mentioned this. Yeah.
But still, that's an interesting step.
Yeah, and it might be a first step. Imagine that in the future, in the world of the future, you could have AAA games come out on the Switch as well, and on really any platform, on your freaking TV if it's enabled. So this is a really interesting step, and it's one more step towards, and obviously it's not going to work for every game, but for a game like this, single player, and for AAA that couldn't be ported on the Switch, it fits. By the way, Assassin's Creed is skipping 2019, which I think is great. It's awesome.
A good idea. Yeah. Very good idea.
Oh, I think we mentioned it last time, but it's a good rhythm to take. And talking about streaming, if you want to play Bloodborne on PC, PlayStation exclusive, it's now integrated in PS Now, which is their streaming service, which is available on PC. So you don't even need a PlayStation to play Bloodborne now. That could be interesting.
That's interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. PS Now, again, you need the infrastructure, but if you do have it, it's possible. Starlink, another Ubisoft game. Starlink Battle for Atlas had a video presentation. You know, it's that game where you have a flight vessel, a spaceship. There you go.
Basically toys. You're like building a little... like a little spaceship thing.
Yeah, and you switch the weapons on the wings and stuff.
Yeah.
And it translates into the actual game. What did you... You said you had a couple of thoughts about that game. What did you think?
I when it got announced at that one E3, was it like 2 years ago, I think?
I think so.
And it before the Star Fox stuff, I looked at it and I'm like, that looks kind of cute. I think that looks interesting. I'm okay with... I like space shooting games. I'll be on Steam, like looking at like all the like not popular shooting games in like a spaceship. Like I'm, for some reason, I can just immerse into that really easily. And I'm like, this one looks kind of cute. And then they added Star Fox, which is my personal favorite franchise. Uh-huh. And I'm like, okay, now we're in. I think I like Metroid a little bit more, but as far as Nintendo franchises go, Star Fox is my jam. And I'm like, okay, I'm gonna play this for sure.
Really?
Like that was just it just sold it for me. I just really like I like this Ubisoft Nintendo like grouping that they have, like this collaboration. Like
it feels so earnest. It feels like they're really friends. These two gigantic $1 billion companies are like buddies.
Exactly. And they're coming out with some fun games. Like the Mario Rabbids game was actually pretty cool. And it's something that you wouldn't get from Nintendo without the collaboration, you know?
That's true, yeah. So you're actually going to go and buy the little toys and switch the... Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I'll do it. The thing is, it's like the Disney Infinity thing. Like some people were huge fans of that for a little while, and then it kind of fizzled out. And I'm expecting this maximum will last like a year or two of like people actually playing it before they realize that printing toys is very expensive for a video game. And like if nobody's buying them, that's not really going to work. But... I'll try it out for sure.
Oh, well, they'll have at least one client, so that's good for them. But, you know, the game looks kind of fun, and it feels like the Toys to Life portion of it, the fact you need a toy, feels almost like a hindrance to the game somehow, because the game itself didn't look so bad. So it's a
really
weird
fun
proposition. Yeah. Two Point Hospital is out, and it's, I don't know if it's because every other game made so much noise, but it feels like this one fizzled out a little bit. Maybe it's not super polished. I've heard some like good / bad things about it. I don't know.
I've never heard of this game. What is this?
Oh, really? So, Two Point Hospital is a spiritual successor to Theme Hospital, which was a revered game back in, I want to say, the 90s. Was super, super loved. And I think that's what it was. We were talking about the games from the NES era a little bit earlier. And I think this is what the same phenomenon. People loved Theme Hospital and they thought they wanted a new one. And the new one seemed fun. And then it came out and people played it for 2 minutes. And then they were distracted by something else.
Yeah.
So... Yeah. I wanted to mention it because it felt like a big deal for people of a certain generation, but I don't know. Maybe it's just not polished enough to attract everyone's attention. But Wolfenstein,
hard time.
It's not easy. Really, it's super. This is the most difficult thing to do. And actually, we mentioned it in the episode about Dead Cells, the episode 91. It's really hard to give people what they want because it's not what they think they want when you talk about those old games. So it's not an easy thing to do. Wolfenstein 3 has been confirmed in development, essentially, and that's, I'm excited. I love the first two, I mean the reboot.
I haven't gotten to play them yet.
Oh, you haven't?
I watched my friend play through one, like the first one, and I'm like, that's cool, because we were getting, he was excited for the second one, and I really wanted to get into it, but again, there was so much stuff out that I was working on playing that I didn't get a chance to play.
That's... You know, the time we live in, so many games. I mean, honestly, Wolfenstein 2 was an awesome, awesome game that even 5 years ago, it would have been a game of the year for everyone. And there are some fun things that happen. The gameplay is good and for some people great, but it's not the main thing. The story is really fun. Anyway, I'm not going to say more, but if you have an opportunity, which you won't because there are so many things coming out. I mean, Red Dead Redemption is a month away.
Oh my God. You just reminded me. I was just excited about catching up on my backlog, and now Red Dead's coming out.
Listen, get Dead Cells and play it for another, you know, for a few weeks until Red Dead comes
out. That's on the top of the list.
Yeah.
I'm definitely going to be playing that because so many people are telling me to play Dead Cells, and I love the Metroid Castlevania games, so I'm probably going to get on that.
I've said many times on this show how much I love Dead Cells, so I'm not going to go over it again, but it is a good game. Overwatch League is getting a Paris team, and obviously being from Paris, I'm happy, and I'm doing a little dance right now, if you can. Overwatch League finally getting a Paris team. I'm going to be cheering for a Paris team, whatever it is, and at least it's a French company that got the license, so I was afraid it was going to be like some Chinese company or something, but it's a French company. That's a good thing. And finally, we've been talking about loot boxes and the Belgian decision to make them illegal in Belgium. For a few months now, I've said many times what I felt about loot boxes, so we're not going to go over that again. But EA is not removing loot boxes from FIFA in Belgium, unlike, I think, who was it? It was Blizzard and another company. I think it was Valve. Can't remember. A couple of companies have complied with the ruling. EA is saying they are not loot boxes. Loot boxes. I mean, it's a big part of FIFA Ultimate Team, so I can understand why the financial incentive is there. I mean, FIFA Ultimate Team is a big part of FIFA. So they're not removing loot boxes. They're saying, we now display the percentages, so it's, you know what you're getting. It's not a surprise box, which is a little bit of a disingenuous argument. But the bottom line is, they have probably talked to their lawyers. Their lawyers are thinking, we have a good chance of fighting this. And I think this is going to go all the way to European courts. It's going to be in courts for years. And this is the real test of that decision from Belgium, which I thought was a bit harsh to label every loot box in every game. Doesn't matter if you can exchange the, like, for games where you can exchange. Anyway, let's not go back into it. But loot boxes in Belgium are creating that legal precedent, and it will be interesting to follow where it goes.
Yeah, that's kind of a big step, like having like a full on legal battle over loot boxes. And if the fact that they're like, you know what, we're going to put them in the game anyway. What are they going to do? Like that, they must be pretty confident in their stance there.
I think so. I think it's the kind of thing you don't do if you don't have a chance of winning. I think you talk to your legal team. For, you know, you make sure with them that you at least have a reasonable argument to make. And of course, in Belgium, they're probably going to lose, but then they're going to appeal. I mean, probably, I don't know. They might lose in Belgium, but even if they do, they're going to appeal. And that's why I think it's going to go to the EU, because this is not something, this is the fight for the industry. It's interesting that it's coming at a time where I don't think loot boxes are going away, but it's kind of being supplanted by season passes in many cases. So it's not as much of a hot button issue as it was a few months ago. But this is how it goes, and it's going to be tested in the courts. And I think you're right. They wouldn't get into it if they didn't think we have a chance.
So. Yeah.
And that is it for this episode of Pixels. Thank you so much for being on. It was great fun to talk about Spider-Man, wish we had more time to do it, but alas, the time is not infinite in the world. But you know what? People might want more of Marcus, and where would they go if they do?
Well, my YouTube channel is the Cosmonaut Variety Hour, where I post bad opinions about movies that you probably like. And
they are the good, they are the right opinions, the ones
that's
you should
right.
follow.
Yeah, we're right. Everybody else is wrong. But that's where I post all my content. And if you want to engage with me, I'm on Twitter at Cinnamon Ghoul. So that's a Cinnamon Ghoul.
Excellent. I will include the Twitter account in the show notes so you can find it easily. For me, it's Not Patrick on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, everywhere you can find it. You also have FrenchSpin.com for this show if you want to comment on it. And as I mentioned a couple of times already, go check out episode 91 if you enjoyed Dead Cells. It was super interesting chat with the developers about the way they approached the game, how to make it compelling, how to make what was important, the challenges they faced, as well as the way they run their company, because some people might have heard of this. It's a very weird company where the structure is they're all co-CEOs. They're all, they joke about the co-CEO thing, but essentially they all have a portion of the company and they all get paid the same. And
that's
it's
weird.
Yeah, it is weird. And it's we get into it towards the end of the show. And I really think it could be interesting for people to listen to. So go check it out. It's Pixels episode 91, the one right before this one. And I think you might enjoy it. And I think that's it. Thank you for listening to this episode. And we will be back in a couple of weeks with a new one. Bye. All right. Spoiler section. If you don't want to know about the story in Spider-Man, turn away now. This is your last opportunity. What did you think? So the story kind of has two parts, it feels like. What did you think of the story overall?
I didn't want to beat the campaign as quickly as I did, but about like halfway through, I was like, I really want to know what's going on. I really want to know what's happening. Like, I couldn't tell. Like, I could kind of see that they were teasing out Doc Ock and they were teasing out stuff about Norman and things like that. I'm like, I want to see who's running the show, because Otto Octavius is kind of he's kind of bumbling and he's kind of like awkward, and he doesn't really come across as the villain until later in the game. So, and then Norman has like these, he's basically the main antagonist in the game because everybody hates him. Even the villains, like they're trying to stop Norman, and Peter doesn't particularly agree with him either. So, and throughout,
You thought Norman was going to be the big bad.
I think I really I wanted it in my heart. I knew it was going to be Otto, but like I was like looking for things like in that one level where MJ is going around in Norman's apartment. And there's like little details, and there's like masks, like goblin masks on his like mantelpiece. And I'm like, okay, I see you. And then there's like stuff about the drone, like the glider. I'm like, okay, what's going to happen here? I thought in my best dream, it would have been both, because I thought like I knew Harry was somewhere not Europe related before the reveal happened. Like I could kind of tell something was off about that. But I do like the way it worked out though. Like, I really do like Otto in this game. He was very, I was really feeling his character.
I think this is, so first, let me say this. I hate that they did this last trailer where they showed the Sinister
too.
Six.
That whole level would have been so cool if you didn't know anything about it.
It would have been so amazing because the game has essentially ended. You can feel that there's stuff happening, but you're like, okay, the main antagonist is behind bars and sure, Doc Ock might show up, but where are they going? And all of a sudden there's this explosion of bad guys. It's like they held nothing back. Like they have everything.
It goes crazy.
And imagine if you hadn't had that trailer where you would see, like, it's all revealed. I was, like, especially as someone who doesn't watch trailers for movies or anything, I felt hurt and betrayed.
I was really mad. After the fact, when I was playing that level, I'm like, because, like, when you go to send, like, you stop Martin Lee, you send him to the raft, and when they're like, okay, Martin Lee's going to jail, in my head, I'm like, oh, so now we're going to have the E3 trailer.
Exactly.
Like, I already knew it was coming, and I'm like, I wish I didn't know that, because I didn't know it was going to come, like, at the end of the game. Like, I was trying to forget about it, and then it happens, and you're like, I saw all of this already. Yeah. Every single thing, beat for beat, except for the very end. Like, he doesn't look up and say, oh, it's you. Like, instead, they kind of, like, they have, like, a cut of just, like, his, like, the tentacle comes down. You're like, oh, okay, I get, like, it surprises you there, but, like, I still wanted that whole sequence, you know, not revealed and spoiled.
Yeah, if you didn't know that there was going to be this whole other part of the game, it would have been, okay, anyway, so, spoiler in the spoiler section, but yeah, it was a bit sad. But Doc Ock, Otto Octavius, I thought he was great. Like, the character looked, and that's true for all of them, they don't really look like I would expect them to look somehow. I have, you know, images in my head, but they all inhabit the character so well. Otto in particular, and Osborn, I think, they have a distinctive look and face and way to move and act and speak. And I love this version of Otto Octavius. He is believable. You care for him. You feel sad at the end when you finally beat him and he's in the raft. And you, like, when Peter has to decide whether or not he's going to help him, it feels gut wrenching.
It was really sad.
and okay, not as sad as the actual emotional gut punch of the game, which,
yeah,
wow,
not expecting that.
I did not expect, and it builds the character so much. Like, literally letting May die is, and of course he has no choice.
That's very Spider-Man. It reminded me of the ending of Arkham City, where, like, Batman, like, you know, it all culminates to you versus Joker, and, you know, will you save him or not? And then it tells you a lot about Batman's character. Like, he's like, I would have saved you, Joker. Like, that is, like, one choice, like, defines the character. And then this reminded me of that a lot, where, like, this one choice, Peter, like, he will put others before himself because of the great power, great responsibility stuff. And, like, that was perfect. It was so... And it hits you in the gut twice. You already have that sad, like, Peter's crying over Otto because, you know, he's his hero and stuff. And then he would go straight to Aunt May. And it's just, you don't get a break. He doesn't get, like, Peter just can't have a good time.
And that also is very Peter Parker and Spider-Man. Like, the way you think, oh, well, he's a superhero. Why doesn't he have a decent, you know, apartment? And why isn't he a little bit, why can't he pay his rent? And all of this, like... The first couple of days that you spend in the city, you're spending all your time saving people. That takes time. He doesn't have the luxury of having a job that brings in money. It's not like the people he saves from criminals give him money to thank him.
Yeah, no sponsorships.
Yeah. Maybe he should get some kind of, you know, PlayStation logo on his costume somewhere.
I did really like when you go through the first few levels up until Miles's dad. The event, like, in that part.
Oh, that's awesome as well, by the way.
Yeah, I really did like how that was done. But before that, there's, like, you play through every single moment in Peter's day-to-day life. Like, I was really surprised when you go and, like, it changes from day to night. Like, there's no day-night cycle in this game. For those who don't know, like, you play until the story tells you it's nighttime now. And he accounts for that. Like, when he goes to bed after 2 days, he's like, I haven't slept since I took down Wilson Fisk. And you're like, wow, yeah, you haven't. And it's very realistic. Like, you feel like you actually are living out, like, a week in his life until, like, Miles' dad dies and it takes, like, a tiny jump to like, a few days ahead. Other than that, like, you experience 100% of what he's doing.
Yeah, which again, it is great to put you in his costume. And it really is a way of experiencing Spider-Man, which I have never had before. You know, all the movies, all the comics, it is entirely different. And it really works, unlike maybe some other attempts in the past. What did you think of the other characters you play, Mary Jane and Miles Morales?
I like Mary Jane and Miles as characters in the game. Like, I love their, I liked watching cutscenes with them. Like, I really liked interactions between MJ and Peter. Like, when you can write Mary Jane and Peter interacting like really well, then I'm gonna be fine with it. Like, I recently reviewed the Amazing Spider-Man movies, and the relationship between Gwen and Peter is so kind of like textbook cute relationship from a Hollywood movie, where it's just they're kind of ad-libbing. They're just talking about nothing important. And you don't feel like in the second movie, you don't feel like they have a relationship. They've you know, been dating for months or whatever. Mm. But in this game, like Peter and MJ had, you know, they broke up, they dated, and they had their thing, and now they're just trying to be friends. And you really feel like that is the case. You really feel the relationship, like, and you watch it kind of like rebuild, and it's very natural. Miles, I like his inclusion in the game. You know, you can see where it's going from a mile away. Like, why else would you put Miles in the game if he's not going to be Spider-Man eventually? But I do like how he, you know, starts off as just like a normal, like regular everyday kid, like the Spider-Man myth of like just a regular person, and then something happens to them and they are thrust into, you know, more responsibility than they were ready for. Like, I like how that's presented. I really liked his first level where you play through I loved in this game when you switched to another character and you saw Peter. Like, when you switch to Miles and you're like seeing through his eyes after the explosion, and you look at your right and then you see that Peter's just like unconscious. Like, I love stuff like that.
It feels like it's rewarding you for playing the game somehow. I don't know, but yeah, it's really great.
Exactly. I just love stuff like that. And then you know, you go through and you do his little thing. I didn't love all of his levels though. Like, there's one where he has to go get the I don't remember. He just has to like go, and it's when they're teaching you
the antibiotics, and you have the rhino running around, and you have to escape the rhino.
I liked the rhino part. I don't like when he was like cutting through the line and like using his little iPhone thing to hack the drone. I was like, I don't want to do all this stuff. Like, I would rather, I don't know. I feel like those missions could have been incorporated a little better. The MJ ones were way more frequent than the Miles ones. Some of her missions, like the Tombstone one, where you just go through that biker mechanic shop, the auto shop, and then you just find out like an information dump that could have been told in like a cutscene. Like, that was the kind of stuff where I'm like, I don't really need to play as Mary Jane in this part. Like, I can just watch a cutscene and learn this one bit of information that isn't really that important, and then we can move on. Like, it felt like it was just halting the progress of like the game, like the pace of the game, just to show you something that they thought was neat.
I agree. I think it's not the best part. Thankfully, it's short enough that you don't mind too much. There are maybe 5 missions with Mary Jane and 3 with Miles, and they're not too long. And some of them are okay. Like, the first one with Miles, as you said, is one of the emotional portions, which, by the way, we didn't mention this, but the game is super happy until the first explosion that kills Miles' dad. And at that point, I was like, oh my God, like, it gets super dark.
Yeah, I was actually like, when his dad comes in that first mission where you're at the docks and you're going through looking for Fisk's stuff. I was really under the impression, I had two thoughts. I'm like, this is Miles' dad and he's going to die at the end of this level. And I'm really glad they didn't kill him then. Like, when he crashes to save Peter, he crashes into that, into the demon who's trying to like kill Peter. I was like, okay, he died, but no, he was completely fine. I'm like, you know what? I'm fine with that. Like, let me get to know this guy, because obviously he's going to die eventually. Let me get to know him and build a relationship with him more. And that was also how I felt about Dr. Octopus. I criticized in my, I reviewed the Spider-Man 1 and 2 and 3, but we're not going to talk about that. and one of my critiques of Dr. Octopus is that his performance is really good, but you don't get enough time hanging out with him as normal Otto Octavius before the robot AI makes him evil. And I usually don't like the concept in a story of, oh, I'm a good person, but this machine is making me evil now. I usually really detest that. But in this game, like, you watch Otto lose his cool. Like, he starts off as this confident, you know, really smart guy, and people keep, you know, getting at him, things keep going wrong, he loses his money, he doesn't really have Peter around that much, he starts to like get really upset, and then it kind of influences him more than the AI turning him evil. I was fine with that at that point. Like, that was kind of like the AI just kind of pushed him over the edge just a little bit, because he was already getting to that point. And that's what I really like, is the buildup of the characters.
It feels like the game really takes advantage. It is super smart. It takes advantage of being a game. It feels like it's more, even more patient than a TV show would be. It knows that it already has a bad guy, and it can use that, you know, the mop up of the bad guy that you already put in prison and the other one that you're, you know, looking for, to build up the other things that it needs to build up in order for the payoff in the end to be satisfying. I wonder a little bit if this isn't like two stories mashed into one, because they thought the one would be a little bit inconsequential or frustrating. It's possible. Maybe Marvel said, just put more bad guys in this. I don't know. I have no idea. But in the end, it holds together, and it does pay off. And talking about what might come next, I'm super excited about a sequel, and to see where they would take this. And
yeah,
like, I want to be with those characters again, like even Miles and MJ and all of them. I want to see where they're, and the sign, the proof of a strong writing. I feel like I know Harry as a character in this game, even though
we've never seen him
at all.
Yeah.
and this is hard to do, but because they talk about him, and because the recordings and a few, like, and his father and the way his father reacts to him, and it all feels very tangible. So
yeah.
I want to see this next game. I wonder what they're going to do. Like, are they going to get some of the Sinister Six to escape again? Or I guess they have no shortage of bad guys. Yeah,
there's a lot of bad guys they could pick.
Yeah. But yeah, so overall, I really like this game. As I said, personal preference, there are other games that I think are going to be my favorite of the year, but it's a really great game. Hard to not recommend. Like, it's even easier to recommend than all of my other choices for Game of the Year. This is a universally good game.
For sure.
All right. I guess that's it for the spoilers section. Anything else you want to add to spoilers before we here jump back to the Nintendo Direct? But the listeners have already heard, so this is the end of the episode for them.
I think I'm good. I think I covered everything I want to talk about.
All right. So thank you very much for listening. You already had the, you know, Twitter handles and all of this at the end of the regular episode, so we won't do that again. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.